Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
I had to ask Laura. She's getting grief from me and Chad on Twitter, if you're following at Chad Hartman Show, also coming at you.
What a big meanie.
Rough. Why are people attacking you today?
Because I was laughing at the Premier of Ontario, who had a bee fly into his mouth during a press conference. And
he swallowed it.
He choked on it and swallowed it. And
it was very funny.
He was fine.
I heard a song He's about fine. That once.
The bee? What song
there
is that?
There was an old lady. No. Oh, sorry,
oh gosh. Okay.
I could not stop laughing. I needed that today because it's been just kind of a blah day. And then the minute I saw that video, I've been laughing ever since.
My oldest, we walked into Central Park in New York and a bird promptly pooped right on Seth.
Yes.
Which when you're a rising senior in high school, everything is potential fodder for that college essay. I'm like, hey, this could be good. I don't know. Like,
yes.
Use that for Columbia or NYU. I have a little breaking news, Laura.
Oh, okay.
I was on the phone while you were on the news, doing your newscast, and Governor Tim Walz has decided not to do a debate with Dr. Scott Jensen at the state fair.
Mm.
So people may see on social media, Dr. Jensen is saying that Tim Walz canceled.
Mm.
Tim Walz is saying, we never agreed that we were going to do this.
Got it.
But, this is often what you'll see. The challenger wants to, why wouldn't you? You want to debate every
sure.
day.
Sure, yes.
And the incumbent, less interested. Either way, no debate at the fair.
Got it. Thank you for that.
So there you go. Why don't we do some more news headlines? It's time for the D-Rush Hour news headlines. And let's keep the political news going with the Jerk Chicken Summit. The Racket reporting this afternoon that jerk chicken is what is on the menu of the peacemaking dinner between U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar and the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey. This is a summit being put on by a man in Minneapolis. Jerk chicken sounds pretty good to me, don't you think? This is Mike Griffin, and he invited both of them to come over. Mike Griffin's a community organizer, and last Wednesday on Twitter he said, let's get these two together for a meal. He wrote, "It's unfortunate that Minneapolis has our congressperson and our mayor publicly at odds with each other." Griffin making the same point I made when I interviewed Ilhan Omar before the primary election. "I don't personally care too much about endorsements. The endorsement of the voters is what really matters. But I will say that it is concerning to me if the congressperson for this district doesn't have a good working relationship with the mayor of the largest city in the state. To me, that is concerning."
We obviously have the mayors of all of the other, majority of the other cities that some of the other cities that we represent.
You could hear the wheels turning during that pause as Congresswoman Omar thinking, what am I going to say to this? Well, the gloves sort of came off on primary election night as the mayor basically called Omar mean-spirited and Omar called Frey incompetent. So this should be a really good dinner.
I mean, it makes sense that you're going to have jerk chicken then, if that's kind of how they feel about each other.
Maybe.
I assume that was the reason behind it.
Well, jerk chicken's delicious. So maybe that's the reason.
Oh.
No pork,
I'm reading
course.
Way too much into it.
It is funny that it is jerk chicken, but I am very glad that these two will be coming together. They don't have to agree on everything, but you need your congressperson and the mayor to be working together to move our city forward.
Oh, well, yeah, 100%. Yeah. You can't have them at odds and expect to get...
They don't have to like each other. That's fine.
But you got to be able to have some sort of mutual respect.
Yep, we got problems. We need people working on them. How about some baby news from the Washington Post? 30,000 people changed their baby's first name in the past 5 years. I often wonder about this. Like, do you screw up in the hospital? You're like, oh, I didn't mean that.
I didn't even think that was an option.
It is an option. And the two most changed names, according to the Post, are Isaac and Chloe. Well, not exactly. Isaac and Chol. I-S-S-A-C and C-H-O-L-E. Look, after you and your partner have gone through labor, spelling is difficult.
Don't you normally, now do you name your child before they're born, or do you look at your child and say, I think this is such and such a name?
I mean,
we named our kid before she was born.
Yeah, you did.
We did, yeah.
We had a couple name choices, and then the baby arrived, and then we were like, that's the name. Some people wait a couple days. Oh, I want to know what name, and then some people misspell it and change it. Why not? A couple other data points from this story in the Washington Post I thought you'd find interested. Minnesota, one of the states where couples are most likely to have children. So how do you nail this stat down? What the Post looked at is couples who are 35 to 45, right? Because most likely those are the years you would have a child.
Right.
In Utah, only 14% are childless. Makes sense. It's Utah.
Yeah.
Minnesota, right there with Utah, 16% are childless. So I'll do some quick math. That means 84% of couples between the ages of 35 and 45 had kids between the age. This was the latest data from 2020. Pretty interesting. Childless jurisdictions, Vermont, Florida, Hawaii, Maine, West Virginia, Nevada sort of makes sense. Kind of interesting. Who knows why? Cool story on the front page of the Pioneer Press today talking about the Great Race. 100 plus classic cars racing through 10 states, including Minnesota. They did a total of 2,400 miles from Rhode Island to North Dakota. The Great Race started in 1983. Every other course is new, and the cars are so old. The newest was a 1974 Plymouth, so a 48-year-old car. Three 1916 models, a couple of Hudsons and a Chevy, were the oldest. The aim of the Great Race, said the event director, is to get old cars out of the garages and museums and get them on the road. The event is loosely based on the 1965 comedy, The Great Race.
We are ready for them. We will blast them to kingdom come. Ah, we can mount, we can blast. We can rise above, we are invincible.
As Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon in that 1965 comedy. This Great Race went relatively smoothly. 550 people took part. They had 130 teams, and 111 finished 9 days and 2,400 miles later. Pretty cool. The housing market can be crazy. Would you be motivated to buy a home that included a free beer every time you went to a nearby brewery and a free growler every 3 months? Fun story in the Star Tribune about a home in Bryn Mawr. Carol and Jesse Hellstone decided to sell their 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom home, and the next homeowner gets a lifetime membership to Utapils Brewery, which is a terrific brewery. Mm-hmm. The Hellstones were investors when the brewery was getting established, so they have VIP memberships, which are transferable. It's a nice little perk.
Memberships. I like that. Memberships. That's clever.
And maybe you heard Chad talking about this earlier today, but Mall of America's Chapel of Love is about to hear the final I do's. Do you accept Tiffany to be your wife? I do. Minneapolis St. Paul Business Journal reporting that after nearly 3 decades of marrying couples inside Mall of America, the Chapel of Love is shutting her down. August 28th, the last day. Soon, Marianne London, going to retire. She's the owner. opened in 1994. Do you remember? Were you around here, Tubbs, when they had a contest at Mall of America for these kind of a blind date scenario, and then you would go and get married?
I vaguely remember it because I was actually working at the Mall of America at, at Knott's Camp Snoopy when it opened, yeah.
And that couple, yeah. It was like a blind date contest, and the bit was that you would get married and go up and get married right in the Chapel of Love. And I believe that that couple is still married.
Still married.
I think I remember like when they hit their 20-year anniversary.
Wow. Did you ever go to the Chapel of Love and see
anybody? Just sit there and watch? No.
Well, I mean, not like some other voice. I mean, like having a reason to go there.
No. Why would you have a reason to go there if you weren't going to get married? Well, I've never been invited to a wedding.
I was actually best man at a wedding back in...
At the mall?
At the mall, yeah.
I love it.
I didn't even think it was that big of a deal.
It was
kind of cool.
I think it's really cool. It was kind of one of the things that made Mall of America unique. The contest was called Married. Dave Weinlich was his name.
And they're still married.
Oh, you know what? I'm sad to see this. Just a quick Google here. Weinlich died.
Oh, no.
From colon cancer in 2018. But they were, in fact, married for 20 years.
Wow.
And he passed away months after they renewed their vows out there at the mall. Yeah. Mm. Great part of the mall's history. And the Chapel of Love. Check it out. Over and out. All weddings are $50 off if you're looking to tie the knot out at the Mall of America in the next couple weeks. It is 5:20 here on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're going to talk about a rise in labor unions. Is this a good thing for the worker? A good thing for our state? Some surprising spots where labor unions are taking force. And your thoughts on this as we continue on Drive Time with DeRussia. 5:25 on News Talk 830, Drive Time with DeRussia. I had never been in a labor union until I got my job at WCCO-TV, where SAG-AFTRA was the union for reporters. And I was a little nervous about it, to be honest. I wasn't personally a huge... Well, I don't know. I thought unions were sort of a relic for factories and something of the past, and having to pay an initiation fee and all of that wasn't something that I was really excited about. So not to say I was anti-union, but I wasn't really excited about it at first. And I became a convert, I'll tell you. I absolutely love being in a labor union. I love the opportunity to sit down at the table with the bosses and have a negotiation. And I've changed my mind. I've absolutely changed my mind on it. We have seen a growth in people working at restaurants. And most recently on Friday, the employees at the downtown Minneapolis Trader Joe's voted to join a labor union. We've seen it at breweries. We've seen it at coffee shops, movements in this area anyway. So we wanted to bring really one of the smartest minds when it comes to labor relations in Minnesota on our show. And Aaron Sojourner joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. For years was a professor at the University of Minnesota Carlson School, and now an economist and senior researcher at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. Aaron, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Jason. That was a really nice introduction. Appreciate the chance to talk with you about these issues.
I have been fascinated. Well, before we get into what's going on in the community, I wanted to give you a chance to react to just kind of what I said about my own experience, having no experience with labor unions and working in a, you know, as a reporter, which you think of, I don't know, people don't always think of, you know, reporters as someone who would be in a labor union. You think of it really as more of a factory thing. But perhaps the entertainment industry, TV, movies, those have often been unionized. But I was hesitant until I felt the power of it Not necessarily even for myself, but for some of my coworkers.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are in your situation initially where they just don't have much experience directly, and maybe they've heard stories about it, and they, you know, they've seen something on TV or a movie that didn't look so great, and, you know, looked very far away from them. You know, I taught a labor relations class at the Carlson School for about 13 years, and every class I would start by asking each student to talk about their experience with labor unions, any experience they had, and almost nobody had any direct experience.
Yeah.
You know, maybe their mom was a teacher, something like that. But you're right, like unions, we have this image of them as something from the past, something, you know, in the mines or the factories.
When it sounds it sounds antagonistic, like it's going to be, there's going to be a fight, there's going to be a strike.
And
that is, you know, sometimes it's antagonistic, but I've found, at least when my experience at TV is that where we had very good relations with our local managers, that it was pretty collaborative and it was pretty positive.
Yeah, collective bargaining is just a process by which both sides can come to the table on pretty equal terms and talk about how to make the place more successful and better. Like, that's the best kind of collective bargaining, when it's a problem-solving tool, it's a collaboration tool, it's a way for everybody's perspectives to be represented and to, like, work through the hard issues that the organization faces together and, like, respect each other's perspectives.
So what's going on right now in Minnesota, as you see kind of Trader Joe's? We've seen a number of service industries, employees kind of looking at or going through with joining a union.
Yeah, you know, I think what's happening here is part of what's happening all over the country now, that there is more organizing activity happening among folks where there hasn't been any for a long time. I think there's a bunch of factors behind that we can talk about. But, there is this whole national wave happening. It's still small relative to the size of, like, the number of non-union workers in the country. It still just kind of sparks. But the question is, like, does it continue? Does it grow? Does it, you know, kind of stall out?
What's your sense on that?
It's hard to know. I mean, I think it's these stories are playing out right now, and it comes down to, you know, the choices people are making on the ground right now, and from workplaces, you know, C-suites, local political leaders, national political leaders. You know, the die is not cast, but I think, you know, one thing that's behind this new surge is that during COVID, a lot of people realized how much power their boss has in the relationship. You know, they signed up for one kind of job, and then the whole organization got hit with this shock of COVID and the changes in the economy. And all of a sudden, you know, the boss is just rewriting the rules for the job and saying, you have to, you know, we used to do it that way, now we're going to do it this way. We used to pay you this way, now we're going to pay you that way. You used to follow these rules, now these are the rules. And I think people did not like that. People did not like having their jobs redefined on the fly. And they felt disempowered by that. Then you had this surge of, like, well, look, everybody got laid off. But then starting last summer, like, especially everybody was so many employers were trying to rehire all at once that it really became a workers in the driver's seat kind of labor market. And workers felt empowered to say, no, this is how it should be. Like, this is the way I want my job to work. And they could try to negotiate that individually, or they could join together with their coworkers and say, you know, we have a better shot at making this real if we stick together. And
but let's be real, like, if you're a cashier at a grocery store, you don't individually have much negotiating power. I mean, maybe you can try to get a quarter an hour more of a raise, but when it comes to work rules and safety and some of those issues, is it your sense that it's these other issues or is it pay driving this?
I think workers care about all these things, right? And they care about pay for sure, and they also care about safety, and they care about scheduling, and they care about benefits, and, you know, so that's another thing about, as you know, from bargaining, like, you get to make these deals in a way that works best for everybody.
Yeah.
You try to find the solution that works best for everybody.
Bargaining is great because you
have different priorities.
Yeah, exactly. It's always hard to get your whole group on the same page because people have, like you said, have different priorities. The last thing I wanted to ask you about is if this is different than, say, back in the last century when most union was associated, well, a lot of those jobs ended up offshore. Is it different when you're seeing restaurants and grocery stores and more service industry that those jobs can't just be offshored like the steel industry?
Yeah, I think that's an important thing that's new that's happening now, is that a lot of the unionization is much more focused on services that have to be provided in place. You know, we see that with schools and hospitals, but now we're starting to see it too with restaurants and retail, as you're pointing out, exactly. Yeah. And that's been a nut that you know that hasn't been cracked at scale.
Right.
And then, you know, we'll see if it can play out. You know, one last point, just, you know, employers love collective bargaining for themselves, right? Like, the owners of companies, the investors, they engage in collective bargaining all the time. Their collective bargaining agents are called managers. The CEO is the top collective bargaining agent for the owners.
Yeah.
And, you know, they love to negotiate, have a representative who represents all the investors when they're bargaining with workers, with suppliers, with customers. But they hate it when workers get together and try to bargain collectively.
Right. Yeah, it's true.
So I don't know.
Well, we'll see how it shakes out. I appreciate the insight. Really helpful. Aaron Sojourner, thanks for your time from the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research.
Thanks. Take care.
5:35. We'll do traffic and weather in minutes on News Talk 830 WCCO. Well, it's 5:43. Perhaps you're getting ready to have family dinner. And with today being the start of high school sports season, perhaps that means the drive-through at Raising Cane's. New study out today shows the average person spends just 3 meals per week with family. This study is conducted by One Poll, and they were looking at table manners in this as well, but it really got me thinking about family dinner. I mean, 3 dinners a week. So you're thinking that's probably Sunday, probably Saturday, and maybe one weekday. I bet a lot of you feel like 3 a week would be a victory. If you have involved kids, it's almost impossible to do. Or if both parents are working, or one parent. I'm at work here till 6. So that the biggest change since I moved from TV working in the crack of dawn to this job, which is a much more regular job, is that it's been a little more challenging to achieve family dinner.
Do they wait for you and eat a little bit later, or do you eat on your own?
They do.
Okay.
So they're waiting.
Okay.
So we're still eating as a family, and I would say we eat together 5 nights a week.
Okay. See, that's really...
I think that's a lot.
Yeah. I think you're very much in the minority.
Yes.
If you can get 5 meals with your family a week, absolutely. Now, do they quantify these as meals that you're sitting down at the table, or are they counting these as going through?
They're not counting a drive-through. These are at-home family dinner.
Okay, once you cook.
Home-cooked type meal. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I
think that's a lot. I don't know. I'm going to lean on the listeners because I feel like you guys know better. But how many meals a week do you have together as a family in your own home? 651-461-9226. You can text or call at that same number, and we'll do our own poll about family dinner when we come back on Drive Time with DeRusha. Talking about a new survey that showed the average family spends three meals, family meals, at home. One of the greatest things about my old schedule working early mornings was the fact that I could start making dinner around 5, 5:30, and my family, even with busy kids, soccer practice, after school, soccer games, my part-time job as a food critic, we would have dinner together, I would say on average, five nights a week. And this is with a 17 and a 14-year-old. So we just prioritized it. I'm so grateful. We really have cherished that family time together.
Well, I think, yeah, it's the old assumption of the nuclear family, mom, dad, two kids sitting around a dinner table. That's, those days are gone for good, bad, or, good, bad, or otherwise.
Yeah, one of our texters at 651-461-9226 said one time a week. I think one time a week is, I worry sometimes that people overstress themselves, like, well, we're going to make a commitment to do three. Well, it's hard.
I think you
make
just
that
take
commitment
it when it
to
comes.
Do one.
I think you just got to take it when it comes.
Is that enough, though? Like, if you really think it's important, I think you need to make a point, whether it's Sunday night or Saturday night or whatever, you need to lock it down. Because otherwise, your schedule fills in. Now, it's tough. Like, in your situation, you're often working at night, right? Mm-hmm. So what time do you usually don't get home until?
No, I might get home at maybe 9:30 or 9:45. But my wife has kind of gotten so used to it that we kind of know what our, we kind of know what our life is. But on Sundays, I was telling you this in the break, Jason, that Sundays are the days that I like to cook for my family, whether it's, grilling or, making a hot dish, just something that I can prepare for them. And it's a lot of it, I think, sometimes, it's just schedules. And unfortunately, sometimes schedules just don't line up. And if you can find that time, that's great. But sometimes it just gets too hard and it's just...
I get it if you work like a late schedule where it's pretty much impossible. But
you can figure out a way.
You can find one day.
Twice a week.
Yeah, I think so. One of our texters saying, I have a few meals a week with the family. Time to get back to family time. Just those conversations. I'll tell you a story about family dinner in our family. There was a night not too long ago where my 14-year-old went upstairs to try to get the 17-year-old to come down for dinner. We usually text the kids. This is how life is. Come on and have dinner. So we text them. And the oldest didn't respond to the text. So the 14-year-old went up, came back down. The oldest never came down. So we started eating. Then the oldest finally comes down and is like, when's dinner? And we're like, what? Well, Seth thought Sam was joking around, never saw our text, and was genuinely disappointed that he missed family dinner.
Well, I guess that's good.
It was great. It was one of those parenting moments where you're like, oh,
he might
we
not
prioritize it, and they appreciate it too.
And that's
it's pretty.
Those
good.
Are the little things, Jason.
That was a victory. Then we got back to being called idiots and the usual. That's how that goes. Fun to be back with you. Twins baseball and the pregame show as the Twins take on the Kansas City Royals. First of three at Target Field is coming up next.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.